I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Chasing Justice here on the America Out Loud Radio Network. This is Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and I am coming to you from quarantine. I think we're all in quarantine right now, right? I mean, some parts of the country, much less than where I am. I'm in New Jersey, New York area, where now the president is even considering a tougher lockdown. Very interesting. We're coming from my position of lockdown. So you may hear beautiful Arthur, our rescue dog. Miss Kathy, my wife, Kathleen Pangaro, is here. She's here with us. We're in quarantine, so therefore there's commentary here. In a little while, we're going to have Jim show up, Jim the Contrarian from the neighborhood. Unfortunately, the rest of the guys couldn't be here because there's quarantine going on, and they all have all different things going on in their lives that they couldn't be here. So I'm a little upset by that, but you know what? We're all suffering. Now, one of the things I wanted to bring up, for those of you out there that are Christian, for all of our Christian faith, this is the Lenten season, and our pastor, Father Brian, right before the apocalypse really took hold, we were in church because, you know, I don't profess to be a holy roller. I'm not. I go to church every week because I'm trying to do the right thing. But I was in there, and he's my pastor now, and he's giving a homily, and he's talking about Lent and the value of Lent. And I've heard this, I don't know, hundreds of times? Well, probably not, because it's my whole life. But his purpose of Lent was that it should be less of the things that we're used to, the things that make us comfortable. Lent is to be a time of reflection about your relationship with God and your reflection of your relationship with the world. And how do you do that? And so therefore there's less. So in a Catholic church, when you go in, there's no holy water. There's no water to bless yourself because you want to see that there's less. You go in and the masses are important. There's important readings about what Jesus did. And when Father Brian talked about that and he said, you know, Lent is a time to really purge yourself of all the things that you take for granted, that your pleasures, all the things that are just extra, and pare it down to a time that's less than that. And I said, and every year I try to do the right thing. I got to tell you, many years ago, my mother, God bless her, Corrine, she was like, why don't you say an extra Hail Mary and Our Father every night? Because you know what? As an adult, what are you going to give up? Do I give up soda? I don't drink soda. You're going to give up this? Do you give up gin? I'm not giving up gin. You know what I'm saying? Jesus and I can argue about that later on. But the point was, my mother, Corrine, gave me that. And she goes, why don't you do that? That was in 2003. And I said, you know what? That's a good one. I'll do an extra Our Father every night. Because I pray. I try to pray every night before I go to bed. I'm not the best. Dear God, forgive me of my sins. Help my family. Right? But I said, I'll do an Our Father and I will do a Hail Mary every night. Well, how many years later is it now? And I still do it. That's my Lenten thing I do every year. My son Jack, God bless him, he's 10 times better than me. He gives up soda, iced tea.
Every kind of drink.
He gives up everything. He's really a good boy. My kids all give up goods. Kathleen gives up ridiculous things that I would never give up. She's very good.
I actually do extra. I try to do extra.
She does extra stuff. Me, I continue to say, but the bottom line is since 2003 or 2004, whenever it was, I say those prayers every single night. And if I forget because I went to sleep, I was tired, for whatever reason, drinking has nothing to do with it. But occasionally I go to sleep, you know, sometimes I don't remember. In the morning, I say them twice because that's important stuff. That it is important. There's a value to it. But as I'm going through this, and Father Brian was saying, this Lenten season is important. This is a time to really reflect and connect yourself to God. We had no idea that the zombie apocalypse was going to jump out and really be a part of our lives at that point. We went to Asbury Park, which used to be the Jersey Shore gym. And we went there with my cousins. And we went out there and we had cocktails and we did a bar crawl. And then a week later, the world was shut down. Mm-hmm. And you can't go anywhere. You can't leave anywhere. This is unique for all of us. So as I think about this, you know, I'm talking to Kathleen. I'm saying, what things have affected all of us. And we went through the historical things. Like, everybody remembers where they were that was old enough when JFK was shot. Mm-hmm. Everybody remembers that. People remember where they were when Dr. Martin Luther King was shot. Everybody remembers that. There are things that are nationwide in our country that connect us at that level that are not the same as the tornado in Oklahoma. We all see it. We feel bad about it. We feel bad about Katrina that it hit New Orleans. That was, the whole country was united to help you, but it didn't affect us in New Jersey. Sandy, Superstorm Sandy, wiped out the Northeast, but it didn't affect you over there in Idaho. It didn't affect you in San Diego. Even though you all cared, you donated, you helped. What are the things that really connected us as a nation? Well, the last thing that we had was 9/11. Even though they hit New York, there were fears and scares at the time. I was in law enforcement that they were going to hit Los Angeles next. I mean, there were jets flying across every capital in this country, whether you knew it or not. Every one of your National Guards was flying high, and they were loaded and they were hot because they were waiting for something to come in and attack your capital in your state. Because you don't know everything that goes on in your state. You might be in Nebraska. You have corn. You have the breadbasket of America. You also have those Minuteman silos. Maybe there was a plan to wipe out those Minuteman silos so we couldn't respond. Maybe it was bigger than we thought it was. We didn't know. So there were jets flying across this country to protect us all. That united us as a country. As a cop at the time, and it's pretty funny because I had injured myself the night before.
It was you had you threw out your back.
A simple thing. I hurt my back and I couldn't walk. Now, my back had been an injury for a while based on what other stuff.
And I remember you being on the floor in our living room with your legs up on the couch. And my father called. And my father said, you need to turn on the TV.
A plane hit the World Trade Center.
Right.
And at the time, they were describing it as a Cessna. Now, for non-flying people out there, that means just the same as a Learjet. A Cessna is normally a one or two engine small plane, 8 to 10 people. And that's what hit the World Trade Center. That was a beautiful, clear morning. It was gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
There was no clouds. And, and you say to yourself, how does an airplane hit a gigantic building? Okay, let me turn on the news. And I could not walk. My back was so bad. I was laying on my back watching the news on this TV, and the whole country was reacting to this. And I'm watching, and I'm looking at the size of the injury to the building, which was gigantic. And I'm saying, that's not a Cessna. That doesn't seem like a small little two-engine plane could do that. And while I'm watching this, I saw the second plane hit the tower. I saw a jet aircraft that holds hundreds of people hit that second tower. And as a law enforcement guy, immediately I knew we're under attack. There's no way that the air traffic controllers sent these jets towards the World Trade, and the pilots couldn't see them. Absurd. I knew we were under attack.
And you were incapable of moving. And you, as a law enforcement officer, wanted to go out there. You wanted to run.
I tried to get off the ground.
Right.
I could not physically walk because I knew we are under attack. This was a national problem. Even though it happened in New York, I knew the whole country was under attack. Whoever was doing this, and we had our guesses at who it might be, but you don't know who's going to be doing these kind of things.
How far reaching
was this? The Russians? Was this the Chinese? Are they taking their move? We take this for granted that we live in this country, that no one would ever come after us. But I remember watching that. When I saw that second plane hit, I knew we were under attack. And I called my headquarters. I said, what are we doing? They're like, we're still assessing. We don't know what's going on, right? Probably a couple of minutes later, I don't have the exact time flying. I'm watching this and they go, an airplane just struck the Pentagon. Now, Kathleen was on the phone with her father talking about the World Trade Center. He was watching it live on TV like we were. And I said, oh my God, a plane just hit the Pentagon. Now, Kathleen was smart enough to realize you hit the two World Trade Centers. Now you just hit the Pentagon. We are absolutely under attack. And she screamed an oh my God in a way that I had never heard before in my life that made the Pearl Harbor event real to me. Because that's where we were. There are these national events that happen to us mm-hmm. that change who you are, where you are. Where were you when Kennedy was shot? Where were you when Martin Luther King was killed?
Even Lincoln.
Where, even back in the day.
Yeah.
They knew about it, right? This was, the scream was so frightening to me, I jumped into protect my family mode.
Because I said, you couldn't move.
I don't know what's going to happen next. Is there a nuclear bomb coming? That thing connected you out there in Schenectady, Pennsylvania, with us here on the Jersey Shore, with everybody in Arizona, California, Idaho, the whole country was under attack. And we knew there was planes inbound that were not answering when we were calling them. Are they going to strike Los Angeles next? Do they have nuclear bombs? Who is this that's attacking us? Mm-hmm. This was one of the most frightening things that had happened to us as a people, and it brought us together. This virus, which many of us are going, okay, when you look at the statistical numbers, the regular flu kills 30 to 80,000 people per year. That means that yesterday, coronavirus killed 500 people in New York and New Jersey, and it killed 12,000 people from the regular virus. And my numbers are not exact. What I'm saying is that the numbers of regular flu are so much higher.
Yeah, you're letting us know that the regular flu actually has more of an impact on our society than the coronavirus.
Right. And we are shutting the country down. Now, in previous episodes, I had talked about what I had found out about this virus and why it is so concerning is because this is not a human virus. This is a virus from the animal species that has now jumped to us. Therefore, we don't know what it's going to be 6 months from now. We're hoping that the virus shuts down when the warm weather comes.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't know it's going to be worse. Like, we're in New Jersey right now. We're like, okay, this has been 2 weeks of lockdown. How much longer? And they're telling us it's 2 to 3 more weeks.
Right.
2 to 3 more weeks? Now, it's not that we can't do it. Kathy already said, you know, she's dealing with it. We're all dealing with it as a family.
But I think that the part that you were bringing up about 9/11... that's profound because nobody else had the experience you had at 9/11. You were in the pit of that building. So I really want you to tell the audience what that was like for you being in the pit when that big shovel, this gigantic shovel came in and scooped out all this debris and it laid it out and all of those workers were there. And they were there and they were scooping with a rake, with a shovel.
Kathy, you're right. And that's where this conversation came from, Kathy and I, in quarantine. We're trying to put this into perspective, just like you are in your home, wherever you are listening to my voice. We're all trying to figure out, is this really as bad as it is? It is a national thing, I can tell you right now. Our country and our economy is shut down. This has years worth of ramifications for all of us and our children.
Profound.
When I went to 9/11, I was blessed and very lucky in that my police department, like all police departments, we're next to New York. New Jersey police departments and our PBA is very close to New York PBA. And they needed help because what they had was you had thousands of construction workers digging through the rubble, trying to find people. Now, no matter what they tell
trying
you.
Trying to find people, what do you mean?
They were trying to find the firemen, the people in the buildings.
The bones.
They were trying to find the people. For months, they thought, I never forget, our PBA went there. And every New Jersey State PBA, local, was given a day or a two. You could go there and work a 12-hour shift. And you went there, and the PBA set up a whole area, the New Jersey PBA, where we had these 7 or 8 quads, you know, these quad vehicles. The place that gives food and stuff to people. I can't think
Red
of it.
Red Cross.
Red Cross. They had a whole building where they gave food. And then there was a group that gave tools and shovels and gloves and boots for the workers. Now, They were not connected to the PBA. They were the electricians, the plumbers, the ground diggers, all these other groups that were working in the pit. And the whole purpose of everybody there was not, as funny as it seems, it was not as an ending to the situation. Even though I went there in December, 3 months later, it was still a recovery. There was still a belief that there was people in there that could be saved. As strange as that sounds, how could survive for 3 months?
Wait, no, I think that actually there was a respect for life.
Well, there was a respect for life. And when I got there, and I see I'm driving this quad around, and we had a backstage pass to life. We got to go into the ground zero. We got to drive around, and I would see these firemen come out, and there's 20 of them coming out at one time. And I'd say, are you guys okay? Do you want something to eat? You want something to drink? And they, like, every single time they looked at me and they said, we didn't find anybody today. They were still searching for people.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the world knew 3 months later, no one's alive in that burning fire pit. But these were their people.
So, Joe, you told me about how that big giant crane that could lift our house up, like, it was nothing.
It was amazing. There was these machines in the pit that were these giant, they looked like a giant hand. You know, if you just open your hand like a Pac-Man, and it would grab tons of material off the walls of the buildings that fell. And it would lay it across the middle of the pit. And then 20, 30, 40, 80 firemen, construction, would run to that pile of debris and they'd start digging through it. And I'm like, what the heck are they looking for? They were looking for a piece of bone, a buckle, anything of an individual human being that was in that pit. And I watched this, and they said, you can go down in the pit. And I drove my quad down into the pit, and the noise was unbelievable. Of these machines, there was 10 of them going in every area of this pit. There was trucks, there was cars. But then you would see somebody thinks they found something. A piece of bone of an individual, of a human being.
A toe bone. Something.
Whether it was a fireman, a cop, or a person who worked in a building, and somebody would blow a whistle, like a fireman's whistle. Boop, 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 boop. And then a huge whistle would blow. And the whole pit would come to an absolute stop. Silence in the middle of this mess.
And in the middle of Manhattan.
In the middle, and these guys would take this thing, and an ambulance would come down, and a gurney came out. And they put something on the gurney.
The tiniest little thing. Yeah.
They put a flag over it. Everybody saluted it, and it drove out of the pit. And then another whistle blew. And then the whole thing started. And I'm like, they did that for a piece of bone of one human being. The value of life cannot be discounted for even a second. What we're seeing now with this coronavirus, the president that you can all complain, he's all about his friends and money, has decided to shut down the only thing that will get him reelected is the economy, because it's the right thing to do to make sure that our country is safe. This is a powerful moment in history. We're going to look back at this 20 years from now. Our children are going to remember. They did puzzles. They had dinner every night. They spent time with their families. They protected their grandparents.
AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Well, as we celebrate our 4-year anniversary, thank you for making it all possible. We are a grassroots movement of patriots, blogs, podcast, video, and 24/7 talk radio on our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We are the vision of the voices, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
It's Lieutenant Joe here for Chasing Justice. You know, here in segment two, I brought in some people from the neighborhood, some of my closest friends. Now, the coronavirus has affected the show, and I'm not going to get into how it has, But today we have Jim the Contrarian. Jim, how are you?
I'm doing great, Joe. How are you?
And we have Miss Kathy, Mrs. Lieutenant Joe, Kathleen Pangaro, the brilliance, the genius, the beauty, the greatness of my family here. Kathy, how are you?
I'm great, Joe. Thanks.
So it's glad to have everybody here. Listen, this is live from quarantine kind of a thing. So in the background, you're going to hear food cooking. You might hear my beautiful rescue dog, Arthur, barking once in a while. My son Jack might show up because he's busy doing homework or whatever.
Never mind Percy the cat.
Never mind Percy the cat, because we're coming to you live from quarantine. Now, on Twitter, I put out a picture of Jim and I. Of course, we're keeping the proper safe 6-foot distance between us. He did try to kiss me. But, you know, that's only because he loves me very much. But you can see on Twitter, there's the picture of us keeping our safe distance. And we are having an adult beverage as we are all suffering through this
it's
quarantine.
It's a tough time. It's a tough time.
This is difficult for everyone. So in the segment before, when I was talking about 9/11, and the reason that I kind of brought that up is, Kathy, you and I were talking about it the other night, the value of that event, and I got to be there live. I mean, I was there in the mud of the pit of 9/11, which was like being on the deck of the USS Arizona, which to me was absolutely amazing. And it wasn't lost on me. It was every moment I was aware that I was in the middle of history.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the things I had talked about is we had these quads, you know, we rode around, we brought the food and stuff to people. But I was on Vesey Street, and right in front of the church, on Church Street, and I stopped the quad at about 10 minutes to 11 at night. It had just started snowing, and I got off this quad, and it was absolutely silent. There was nobody for blocks in the middle of Manhattan, and that has never been lost on me. I said, when was the last time somebody stood in the middle of Manhattan all by themselves? And I remember screaming out your name, Kathleen, and it echoed through the buildings, Marisa, Jack, right? It was all this stuff, you know? It was pretty interesting. But that was important to me, was that whole thing about the pit, being down in the pit and watching the reverence for each and every one of those pieces that they found, whether it was a belt buckle, a piece of bone, anything of a person, was so important because we cared about every single life. And I'm trying to compare that to what's going on now with Corona, because this is affecting the whole country, like 9/11. This is the last thing that affected the whole country. Kathy, you said Superstorm Sandy. I said, yes, that was devastating to the Northeast. But in Oklahoma, they didn't suffer any effects from that. 9/11 is the last national thing that really hit us as a country. And this coronavirus is difficult. We are in quarantine. We are locked down. We're not supposed to go out. So how is everybody dealing with that?
Well, I have a comment. I found it very interesting that you were talking about how at 9/11 you saw that respect for life. And with politics today, I'm going, Trump has this respect for life. He is shutting down the economy to respect life. And what does the left turn around and say? They say, oh, he wants to have the economy come back, and we're going to be very upset about, and they're saying, so the next death is on his conscience. So here he is really having respect for life. 9/11 was that respect for life you just talked about. And I'm sitting this going, such a disconnect.
Yes.
Here at home, we're managing.
Right. So, Jim, let me ask you something here. One of the big comments about Trump is that all he cares about is money and his businesses. From the left, he hides everything he does to make sure his businesses do well and big business makes money. How does it make sense to shut down the American economy? How does that help any one of his billionaire buddies in his own businesses? How does that help them?
It doesn't. Trump alluded to it. You know, it's very difficult when you're assessing the health concerns and the fact that the economy is suffering. And the longer we stay in this quarantine, the greater the suffering, the greater the destruction of the economy. And Trump is very cognizant of that. And I really believe that there's many on the left who couldn't care less if the economy went into the tubes, because all that would mean for them is an opportunity to gain power next year.
Of course.
And it's a shame. We should all be in this together. But every single time, not all of them, you know, some of the governors have done well. They've minimized their political rancor. And I appreciate that. But you want to know some of the real consummate politicians, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, They should be ashamed.
Cuomo. Cuomo from New York. Come on.
You know, he had his moments of, well, I thought he was in it and he was working, but then he had the moments where he became very political.
Well, you know what happened is that because he has acquitted himself very well, coming out, not blaming the president.
Right.
Trying to have great, he's been having great briefings.
Mm-hmm.
He went on the Sean Hannity show and he put aside all his politics and he talked with Sean for a couple of sections and all he talked about was doing the right thing. So mm-hmm. much so that just like when his father gave that convention speech and they all said, oh my God, Mario's the next president of the United States. Now, the Democrats who are really stuck with Joe Biden, bumbling, stumbling, sexual assaulter maybe Joe Biden, are going, Andrew Cuomo, that's a guy we can get. And that's when it turned back to the politics. And wait a minute here. This guy has acquitted himself very well national
now,
stage.
Now all of a sudden he realized
all of a sudden,
that, you know,
and
I can
he
make
realized
A out of this.
I can maybe
same thing,
be the guy.
It's the same thing Christie did with Obama. When Christie kissed Obama or hugged him, whatever it was he did during Hurricane Sandy, it gave Obama the election.
It showed him
I'm
to be
saying,
the leader.
I'm saying, so now Cuomo is doing the right thing by his state, and all of a sudden he's seen himself as a national figure.
The
right.
difference is Christie did not use it for political head. He knew he needed Obama. New Jersey was suffering because of Superstorm Sandy. And what Christie did was, hey, you know something? He's our president. My state is going to need, you know, a
right.
relationship with the federal government. And he gave Obama respect.
And that was the unintended consequence, that it made Obama
I
look
know.
Like
exactly.
the ultimate
I'm telling
leader.
You, when I saw Christie give Obama a kiss on the cheek, I was just like, we're done.
So the bottom line, though, here for Cuomo is that, first of all, if you have to, you can't just go by what he's doing a good job in this crisis. His state is suffering the most in this crisis, and he's leading very well.
Didn't he hide some ventilator or something? What was that?
Well, that's
30,000. I don't think he hid them.
He just didn't know he had them.
So, I don't know. Like, who's
right,
making,
that just came
I don't
out
know.
In the news recently, that there was 30,000 ventilators that he didn't know he had. And, of course, he's been very gentle on going to Trump's because he needs these things, right?
Right.
But when you look at what he's doing, you can't forget the people are leaving New York in droves because of the confiscatory tax policy, regulation on business, destroying everything. He is a liberal at the apex of what a liberal is. He just happened to do really well in this crisis, and we can't get caught up in visuals mm-hmm. that he looked so great during this. He should be our president, and then he takes the entire country, liberalizes it, and drives it into the ground like Obama did.
Right.
That's kind of the problem here.
I think, though, the Biden is just a bumbling idiot. What is the Democrats' whole purpose of having Biden?
Well, my opinion, and Jim, you jump in here, because here's what I thought. For years and years and years, most of our political life, we have said that the left, the liberals, are actually socialist communists.
Mm-hmm.
We have said that. We've accused them of that.
Mm-hmm.
And they deny it. They deny it. The media protects them. No, no, no. If Bernie was their standard bearer, if Bernie was their guy, they're going to put up a president who is an avowed socialist communist. That kind of takes that veneer right off. They can never say they're not socialist communist if he's their guy.
So then people have to choose between capitalism or socialism.
Right. And I think the party has made the decision, we'd rather lose with Joe Biden than to lose with Bernie and have that moniker thrown on top of us.
I think you're both of them wrong.
Really?
I think Bernie Sanders, and I respect him because at least he's honest about himself.
That's true.
Biden is a socialist communist in disguise. He's a wolf in sheep's clothing.
Oh my gosh, Biden isn't anything. He's a puppet.
Well, you're probably true.
There's nothing to him. He's
accept,
a shell of a man.
He would accept socialism if it were communism.
Okay.
It gave him more power.
So let's look at that for 1 minute. Let's look at it from the human side. And this is how I look at everything that comes up. There's always a human side to it. Joe Biden is an older man now. He gave his life to government, whether you like it or not. That's where he was. He failed as a presidential candidate twice. He was a successful, as best as you can tell, vice president to go out as president. And he's already said, I got to pick a really strong vice president because I might not make it the whole 4 years.
He said that?
Yes, he did. So he says, I'm either going to pick somebody really strong because I might not make 4 years.
Would he pick Cuomo or Michelle Obama?
No, he's probably looking, they're all thinking he might pick Hillary, and then Hillary gets to be president, and that would people would support that. But yeah. What I think is the bigger picture, the human side of that, is that here's this guy going, I dedicated my whole life, I will go out being president if I can. So you know what? I'll say anything, I'll do anything, I will cap off my life being president of the United States. He failed twice before. For good reasons. But I'm thinking that's the human side. Everyone in his family is going, this would be good for Dad. Dad could be the president. It would be great, right? It wouldn't be good for the country.
Of course
not. It would be good for Joe Biden personally. But you watch him when he talks about these classic American things. This is so funny. He goes, 47 years ago, well, and you know how that went. Because he doesn't know any of these things. These are not important to him. Those historical...
No,
On the left, those things aren't important.
I know, but he's as old as my father. He's bumbling around because people at that age bumble around.
Right. And we've talked about that. It's not necessarily... Ronald Reagan was brilliant to the very end.
Well, until he had Alzheimer's.
This guy has problems.
Look how much money Biden's family made as him being vice president. Imagine if he was president.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. He would abuse the system, rip off the taxpayer, and... enrich all his friends, just like the Clinton Foundation. It would be disgusting. And then, you know, and then it will get to the point where enough's enough. I'll be honest with you. He is a crook, plain and simple.
I actually like the fact that Biden is their candidate because I really feel like people have to choose between him and Trump.
Right.
And Trump is so much brighter and more dynamic. And I think that's going to be a great show.
And he will destroy him in
the sad part is, if I keep getting scared going, who's he going to pick as his vice presidential candidate?
Kennedy. Yeah. Well, he said, I'm going to pick a black woman.
Right.
How many Americans do you think would love to see America fail? I think there's a good 30% of the population that want to see America destroyed.
My daughter's age group.
Right.
Is that. You know, the 20-somethings.
Well, they've been taught to be that.
They've been taught. I mean, even though we're at home talking all the time, doing whatever, I should have homeschooled them all. Because that little bit of time they put in with their teachers and that school, it was 8 hours a day. She was indoctrinated.
Mm-hmm.
It was horrifying.
The bottom line, what she tells me, and I've had long conversations with my daughter, she asked me the other day, she goes, I'm a little bit liberal. Nobody else in my family is.
A little bit liberal.
She says, I'm a little bit country.
Yeah. He's a little bit rock and roll.
Which is funny, though, because she's very pro-life. That's the one thing she does hang on to. She's
praise
very
God.
Pro-life. But she says, I'm liberal. Do you see me as one of these crazy left-wing nuts, or do you see me as someone who's just left-wing?
Did you tell her the truth?
I told her the absolute truth. I said, listen. Like I have said about everybody in all of our families, we all have liberal people that have these left-wing thoughts. They want to do good things. They believe in people. They believe in kumbaya. And that's all good stuff. What we know as conservatives is that there's a certain way you actually get that to work. You can't just have good feelings and it works out. What I tried to tell her the other day, my daughter, my beautiful, beloved daughter, was that all the people of her age who believe all these good things, that's what they should believe. It's the leadership of their party that betray them by using their good feelings to gain power. It's about gaining power. It's not about doing the good things they profess. Because she was dumbfounded when I said, your whole party, all they talked about was anybody but an old white guy. And who did you end up with? An old white guy or another old white guy. Why didn't you vote for the young gay guy who was a pretty smart guy? I mean, you can't deny...
That was her favorite choice, actually.
Right, you can't deny that Buttigieg is a smart young man. Doesn't matter who he loves. Who the hell cares? Does anybody care anymore? Why didn't you all pick him?
Actually,
why didn't the whole party go for those people?
Against Trump, he probably would have been the best choice. He's eloquent. Yes, very liberal. But at least he could profess his ideas eloquently. Not like bumbling Joe.
He can make an argument.
I know, but I'm telling you right now, the Democratic Party probably has a favor. Remember when the Republicans gave it to...
Dole.
Dole.
Yes.
They gave it to Dole.
It's his turn.
It was his turn. And you wanted to go, oh my God.
Why'd they give it to McCain? It was his turn. He tried twice and he wasn't willing to fight back. This time, it's old Joe's turn because they know they're not going to win.
And I think, I thank God, because I think Trump has a better chance of having old Joe in.
But to finish my thought on my daughter, I thought she said something very profound to me. And again, I'm not professing all of her thoughts, but I'm trying to understand. She actually is reasonable when she articulates them. She's not a crazy left-wing nut. She's a left-wing person. And she says to me, well, I don't want Joe Biden. Joe Biden is an old white guy who believes in nothing about the New World. He doesn't like Buttigieg, and he could be a sexual assault guy. How do we vote for him? And I said, well, that's
fair.
That's fair, but do you think the media is going to bring out that whole story? She goes, I know they're not. I know the media is going to protect the left, and I can't go into that voting booth and push a button for that guy knowing he did these bad things. Which is good for all of us, because there's probably lots of these left-wing young people who, first of all, don't show up. Second of all, won't go in and push a button. Let alone all the Bernie people who have got to feel betrayed. This party totally betrayed every one of them. Mm-hmm. Bernie probably could have won.
Last election and this election.
Right, but they don't want him. So they're throwing him out. They're changing the party. They're changing the process. All I know is I would say to anyone who's on the left, and I thought of this today in the shower. Now, I have a lot of great thoughts in the shower. Mostly I think about my wife in the shower. But normally,
Stop it.
Mostly I think about like what's going on. Things come to me in the shower. And one of the things that came to me today is in this coronavirus time, with all of the terrible things that are going on, can we just take a minute and stop with the politics? And let's say, okay, Trump said bad things you don't like. The economy is roaring. The only reason we're going to survive this coronavirus is because the economy was roaring. Mm-hmm. And when it comes back, the only reason we're going to survive is because it can come back. Because of the policies he put in place. I don't care what stupid things he says, what he tweets out. Right. What's our choice? Go backwards to the Obama days and the destroyed economy?
And Biden? Come on.
Come on, people. Let's have the argument 4 years from now of which way our country should go again. But right now, freedom, liberty, democracy, surviving this terrible thing and moving America forward. That's where we need to go.
He's given us hope, Joe.
He's given us hope. And that's why we're there. Not because of the stupid things he says. Hey, this was a great segment. Everybody out there in America, you have to ask these same questions of yourself. What are you doing? We believe in you. We believe in America. We'll be back in a minute. I'm Lieutenant Joe here on Chasing Justice.
What if a new treatment, backed by 17,000 scientific articles, was proven to extend our lifespan, protect against terrible diseases like cancer, heart disease, and dementia, make us more attractive and thinner, feel calmer and happier, and boost energy levels, memory, and performance? What would you pay for even the smallest dose of this treatment? Well, the good news is you don't have to pay anything, because these are just some of the benefits of a full night of quality sleep. If you're one of the millions of Americans who need better quality sleep, the time to change is now. Until now, most sleep aids haven't worked, but a new, easy-to-swallow sleep gel, invented by the leading nutrition company, Healthy Cell, is designed to support all four stages of human sleep to help you fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deep, and wake up refreshed. It's called REM Sleep. To get a free two-night supply of REM Sleep, visit healthycell.com/sleep. That's healthy, CELL.com/sleep.
And welcome back to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe. I am here with some fantastic guests today. Kathleen Pangaro, genius, brilliant, beautiful, smart, all of the good things. Actually, the better part of my family than me.
True.
Isn't that something? Got an ego just like mine. It's ridiculous. And of course, Jim the Contrarian Giordano.
So Kathy gets all this beautiful accolades when I get Jim the Contrarian Giordano.
I wasn't done yet. You were contrarian. You jumped in the middle of my giving you something.
He was going to say you're beautiful too.
I was going to say you are a brilliant man. You are very, you think about things very, very deeply. So one of the things on our Twitter at Pangaro Global that I had put out, I try to put out my thoughts.
What's Pangaro Global?
That's my Twitter account, at Pangaro Global.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Can you imagine that? What else does she not know about Lieutenant Joe? She knows everything.
You have secrets.
I have no secrets. I'm the openest book you could ever have. I'm not as much fun as I sound like I am. Anyway, I put out a saying, because I put these things out, and some people have said to me, gee, that was really nice that you said that. It was a nice way you said it. You think about I really don't. Because I write, and I do a lot of writing, because I write these things, I try and encapsulate my thought and put it out in a concise way. Because I used to put out 78 paragraphs. And then Mrs. Lieutenant Joe would say to me, nobody wants to listen to your nonsense for 72 paragraphs.
Oh my gosh, stop. It's like a fire hose. You can't do it.
Thank you, Steve Rice. Yes, so what I now is try to encapsulate my thought into something that has some meaning. So here's something that I put out the other day in reference to where we are, because this segment, I want to talk about the reset, the gift of a reset we've all been given. We all are traveling 1,000 miles an hour. We're doing 1,000,000 things every day. We're chasing the almighty dollar. We're trying to make our lives better and better, pay for college, take care of our kids, everything we're trying to do. And right now, the whole country is stopped. It's not just in the Northeast. It's not just in Oklahoma. It's not just in San Diego. The whole country is put on hold. This is an important moment for our country. This is historical.
Yeah, historical.
Like 9/11, all of us are feeling this. And I tried to say, what value would this bring? If it's just to shut our economy down and we all get to stay home for a month and a half, that has no value to us. We have to find greater value in this than that. So here's what I wrote. I'm going to quote it out to you. As hard as this is, if we see it as a gift, a chance at a reset, it can be empowering. The whole world has stepped off the rat race treadmill for a few weeks. Take a breath. See what's important. See who is important. Listen for the quiet voice of God. Soon enough, the engine will start up again. Now, I'm not saying that was profound. I'm simply saying that's how it felt.
Mm-hmm.
This is all going to come back together. This economy was roaring a month and a half ago. There were 1,000,000 jobs more than there were Americans to take it. That's not going to go away. This is all going to come back. It may be difficult for a while, but we're in that place now. We have that kind of leadership. So I wanted to throw that out there. What do we do with this reset?
It's how it's going to come back. I think if we reset and we look at what this is bringing, listen, a lot of people are going to go through a lot of tragedy. We're all in fear. I get it. But when we come through this, you know, I'm spending a lot of time with my family. I'm spending a lot of time at home. I'm not going out to dinner all the time anymore. We're doing things differently, and I'm appreciating the little things. You want to know something? My daughter's with me. She's older.
She's older, like 85. What is she?
And you know something? I'm appreciating it. And when we come through this, am I going to say to myself, you know something? All those things that I used to worry about, maybe I shouldn't worry about them as much anymore. What about just going out, living your life, being happy, smelling the roses, of which I remind myself all the time, and I never do. Smell the roses. We're all living. We're in the greatest country in the world. We there's a lot of hope that we have in the future. That's all I'm saying.
I will tell you that the Democrats seem to be worried about the economy coming back, and they are trying to destroy it.
No question.
I think the greatest gift this is going to bring to our country is that we are done with the nonsense. We are going to be able to say, hey, they had us going 100 miles an hour. This craziness of trying to make enough money, put enough in retirement, deal with the politics. You know what? We took 2 weeks off and nothing happened. We still have our home. We still have our family. This, I think, actually is going to help the country see that there is something more out there than the rat race. And that's going to actually affect politics more than anything else. Is that we're going to be rested. We're going to be whole.
That's a good point, Kathy. I like hearing that. And I got to tell you, an article I have wrote, it's up on the platform, AmericaOutloud.com. Go there and look up Chasing Justice or Lieutenant Joe, and you can look for it. And I thought of you when I wrote it. And I wrote,
Is thought this, of me?
Yeah, you.
Okay.
You are one of my guiding forces in life to help me do what I need to do. Is this situation, and this was at the beginning of it, this was not 2 weeks down the road where we're all, you know, we need to shave, we need, you know, more toilet paper and stuff like that. What I'm saying is this a chastisement or is this a wake-up call?
It's a gift.
So a chastisement, the purpose of a chastisement from God is not just to hurt you. Just like all discipline, it's not to hurt you, it's to teach you a lesson. Now, as America, not everyone believes in God, not everyone believes in Jesus, but whether or not you believe in that is not relevant to God. God hopes you believe in him, but you know, most of us out there in Chasing Justice Land, we do. We have some understanding of God. And is this a light chastisement saying, hey, I'm trying to help you? So where you're seeing it as a positive thing, Kathleen.
I am.
That, and Jim, you too. You said you spend time with your family. You're thinking about things you didn't think about. We're not chasing that dollar bill down the road like it's the only thing in the world. There is more. And maybe this light chastisement is a chance for us to reset.
Chastisement. I have, this is where my contrarian is coming through. God doesn't chastise. He guides, but he doesn't chastise
a
negative thing.
Please, you're such an idiot. Of course he chastises. Do you not read the Bible? Oh my God.
But I will say, we both agree, we all agree on the fact that this is an opportunity, even though I understand people are going to be suffering, and hopefully none of us will be one of those people.
We don't want anybody to suffer.
Exactly. This is an opportunity to reset. Mm-hmm. Not only our lives, but the thought process about what our country is about, but getting closer to your community. I mean, there's a lot of importance to that. I mean,
Now, we've taken vacations. We've gone on vacations. You've gone on a vacation. If you're lucky enough to go for 10 days, you go for 10 days. The last 2 days of your vacation, you're gearing up for going back to work, going back to that rat race, right? And you're gearing up going, because nobody else was on vacation. I was on vacation. I had to go back to all those emails. I had to fix all that stuff I missed. The last 2 days of your vacation aren't even vacation.
No, it's a suffering because
it's
you know you missed everything and then you have to catch up.
But now we are in a time where the whole world is taking a vacation. Nobody is missing. We are actually relaxed. We are really in a point where we are saying, you know what? Yes, I'm doing my work from home. I'm doing my school work. I'm doing all those things I need to do. We're doing that. I homeschooled two of our children, and you could do your whole school day in 2 hours. Your whole school day. You don't have to walk in the halls. You don't have to work about this thing. Whole school day in 2 hours. Well, we can do our whole work day in so many hours, maybe 5 hours. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of time. You're not driving around. You're not on subways.
Ancillary time.
At the coffee pot, BSing.
Right. You can concentrate your time. But now we're sitting here going, this is kind of cool. I'm really enjoying it. I am totally rocking this quarantine. I'm rocking it. I'm loving it.
And it is very, very interesting because I was telling Kathleen the other day, I was outside in my backyard and I had a few minutes in between projects because my projects don't end. I'm a teacher, I'm a trainer, I have my business, you know, True Security Design. That doesn't stop. Just because the world stopped, I have to prepare. I'm doing webinars now and online training, all that kind of stuff. So I'm out in my yard the other day and I talked about this in a previous episode. The Pope had said, hey, make use of your time. Make good use of your time. And I like, okay, what would I never do? And I told you, I had some wood sitting around in my yard that I'll make a birdhouse one day. And then I went out and I took an hour to build
it was 30 minutes.
Build a birdhouse and paint it and put a roof on it and hang it up on my fence. And I got to tell you, about 15 minutes in, I was so relaxed. I was feeling so comfortable. I'm doing it. About 18 minutes in, I'm like, all right, this is taking too long. I have other things I have to do. Wait. Do the right thing. Make the birdhouse. And I made the birdhouse.
This is a pandemic. You can relax.
I can relax in the pandemic. I still owe my employer and all my clients and everybody my time, which we're doing. But I remember walking around my backyard the other day, and I'm like, all I am about is I have to make more money. 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 Make more money. So much so, I got so frustrated. I'm like, the apple tree that I thought was dead is blooming. And I almost missed that. Because I'm worried about, I'm back in the world. And then I felt like I've lost 3 weeks' time. And that's when I came in and Kathleen said to me, Joe, the whole world is on a break. Everybody is on a break. You haven't lost ground. No one has gained ground. We're right. all just stopped. Take a deep breath and listen.
And that's
where that writing came from. That's where that, what are we going to do with this valuable gift we've been given? We've been given a moment to go, what is important?
To call it a gift is difficult. Because, listen, there's a lot of tragedy, there's a lot of fear and everything.
Agreed. And I don't want it to be a gift.
Yeah, I think you would be missing. To make it a gift is what we need to do. Let's make lemonade out of these lemons. And I agree. I agree with you wholeheartedly. Because you want to know something? I don't take time to smell the roses either. Mm-hmm. And that's a shame. Mm-hmm. If I can come out of this and do that, what a big win. For me.
You're absolutely, for many people. And I got to, Jim, you brought it up three times now, and I haven't addressed it, and I really should. Here in our homes, right now, we've been blessed. Nobody is sick.
Right.
Our paychecks are still coming in. We still have food. We have power. We have electric.
Mm-hmm.
There's food. We're searching for toilet paper like we're in the zombie apocalypse. But other than that, we're pretty good. There are lots of people that are suffering the loss of people to this coronavirus. And we have to give a minute to that.
And the men and women who are nurses and doctors and police who are out there.
And our food store people.
Food store people.
Truckers.
God bless all of them. I mean, we are not suffering. Here, we are not
what
suffering.
What a gift that is.
Yeah.
And to look at it, if you looked at it properly, imagine being out there on the front lines. You are actually doing something for
yes.
everybody. The truck driver is like, you know something? I don't want to do this. I would like to be stuck at home. But we're taking our benefit out of this.
Right.
But the truck driver should feel great because you are contributing to the community of America. The nurses, the doctors, all the people who are on the front lines, thank you.
Yes. And Jim, you're so right. Because, you know, Yankee Doodle Keith, we've talked about him, my friend who works in a food store in New Hampshire. This guy calls me up and he's been working. Now, normally he works 20, 25 hours a week. He's been working 45, 50 hours a week. He's overwhelmed and he calls me up and he goes, it's nonstop. I'm not an essential worker, but I can't go home. I have to keep working and I don't know what to think of it. And I said, hang on a second. As law enforcement and our military and our fire department, I've been in those situations where I couldn't go home. Kathy, during Sandy, I wasn't home.
You weren't home at all.
I came home for a break, and then I went back to keep everyone else safe. And that was horrible for me, as it is for all our first responders. But this is an opportunity, and I said to Yankee Doodle Keith, I said, hey, listen, this is your chance to rise. You people are now on the line. Mm-hmm. Now, doctors and nurses are always on the line, but in this thing, they're in the front line. They are protecting all of us.
I know. And, you know, I heard about the truck drivers coming across and all of the, what are those, like the stations, gas stations with the food and stuff. Truckers rely on
the
rest stops. Yeah, the truck drivers rely on those.
Yeah.
And they were shutting those down. Well, we had to say as a country, wait. We have to think about what we're doing here. We have to make sure our truck drivers can make it across the country. They can stop, shower, eat, do whatever. There's things.
Now I saw Chick-fil-A, however you say it.
Chick-fil-A.
A great company, okay?
We love Chick-fil-A.
They were saying, even though they were shut down, truckers, you can pull in, use our bathroom, and we'll give you food.
Did they really?
Yes, they did.
God bless them.
Go buy Chick-fil-A, okay?
Yeah.
You got to support the right people.
And I have to say, the companies have really stepped up.
Yeah.
You just watch. Now, I want to talk about the future of our economy, when this is over, we're going to come roaring back. I'm telling you right now, I am sick and tired of cooking. 14 days I've cooked in my house every single night for everybody. I'm cooking.
I cleaned up. I scrubbed the pots.
You did not. You cleaned up twice.
Oh, stop.
Oh, you cleaned up twice.
God.
I am cooking.
Lieutenant Joe has the great life.
I am suffering all my cooking. When this pandemic is over, I am going to totally make sure we're out and about and we're doing things.
Yes.
And I think the whole country is going to feel that way.
You're right.
It's kind of like, you know what, you get to stop.
And I'm going to give a shout out here. My local police department, Bricktown PD, put out a PDA, or whatever it's called, public thing. Thursday is order out, because there's so many businesses in our communities that are going to barely survive. You know what? On Thursday, order out. Let them know in advance. Don't call them Thursday and say, I need a chicken parm dinner. Call them Wednesday and say, hey, tomorrow night I want 3 chicken parm dinners. Keep our businesses afloat. They help us. They're part of our community. They're part of what we do.
And when this comes back, when that waitress comes up to you, give her an extra tip. Give her an extra tip, because you know they've suffered. I know the government's trying to help out a little bit, but these are the people who are doing a lot of sacrifice, because they're the ones losing their jobs.
They are.
So when you get there, instead of the 20%, how about a 30% tip? And do it more often, because these people need to come back.
If you can afford it, you're investing in your country. That's what I'm saying. It's investing in your country. You know what? We're not out there. We're all sitting at home. These people are still on the front line.
Investing in your community. Yes. And we're all one community.
It's
not
be,
a village,
it's gonna
a
be,
community.
It's going to be beautiful.
It is.
Think about,
I will tell you right now, it's going to be beautiful. We're going to come back. It's going to be amazing.
It's gonna be summer,
I think better than ever.
I love it.
Yeah.
Better than ever. So, hey, listen. And, hey, it ain't over. It's just beginning.